The following program is a production of KHNS. Its content does not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of the Board of Directors and staff of Lynn Canal Broadcasting Incorporated, the licensee. Welcome to Talk Around Town. I'm KHNS News Director Margaret Friedenauer, filling in this week for Deborah Schnabel. Today we are not live in the studio, but we still have your favorite segments. Stay tuned for our current news analysis with Tom Morfitt. Today's talking topic is Haines Small Boat Harbor Overview and Projects. We'll talk with Haines Harbor Master Phil Benner and Ports and Harbor Advisory Committee Chair Norm Hughes about plans for improvements and timelines for upcoming projects at the harbor. And we'll check in with the American Bald Eagle Festival and State Parks Ranger Preston Coors. And we'll also be looking at upcoming Glacier Bear events. This is Talk Around Town. Thanks for joining us. In our first segment, we normally check in with Chilkat Valley News publisher and editor Tom Morfitt. This week, we took the microphone to Tom, where he talked to us Wednesday from the newspaper office, and we discussed how the outcomes or pending outcomes of the recent election will affect Haines. I guess the big news this week might be the election. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, you know, I really think that I guess the big news of the election we'll know next week, or the 15th is the final.
21st.
The 21st is the final count. But, you know, obviously fascinating and gets us back to the statement that, you know, every vote counts. I think Jonathan Kreis Tompkins launched just an incredible campaign, had, you know, a letter writing campaign going, had all kinds of people. I think he had a half dozen people here during the fair. I don't think Bill Thomas was really expecting to have that kind of, to face that kind of organization. But every 10 years, these seats get changed around and everything is up in the air.
Well, you were here like the last time that there was probably this close of a race with, was it Tim June? That it was probably this, it didn't get this close, but it was still close, right?
Yeah.
What do you remember about that?
I believe there was a recount in that, race and, you know, and that was Bill's first run as the Republican candidate for House. But again, it's I think after a candidate is in for a while, then their position there is cemented. But it's the redistricting now that changes the whole equation. Obviously. There were folks in Sitka who were Republicans who obviously cast their ballot for JKT for, you know, understanding that having someone from your town gets your town a lot of influence regardless of what party they belong to. And Thomas, he had people from Sitka come out and I think Ben Grusendorf's widow wrote a letter saying, you know, this is important to have, you know, to have this experience that Thomas had. But that youth campaign that JKT or Jonathan Kreis Tompkins organized was impressive and obviously effective.
And what do you think? I mean, Thomas has made a lot the last nothing, not that anything can change, but Representative Thomas has mentioned he's no longer on at least chair of finance. Jonathan likely won't get any leadership roles. We have very few Southeast senators or representatives now on any important committees. Obviously, that's a big effect of this election, it would seem. Either way, I mean, just even though Thomas wasn't elected without outright, we have to wait for these absentee ballots, but that made him, he says, lose his co-chairmanship.
Well, you know, when they reorganize the chairmanships and those committees, everybody wants that seat. It's a powerful seat, and it's and on that level, it's every man for himself in terms of getting that seat. Haynes has, you know, will likely lose or has lost influence in Bill's estimation. If Bill loses the race, it will be a real test of Tompkins' ability to see what, if anything, he can deliver. You know, I think Haynes, for years, has fallen behind in maintaining our local facilities and roads and whatnot, and Thomas was turning those things around. Without that influence, it's likely that, if we want those things now, we're going to pay a lot. We're going to be paying for them directly rather than through the state legislature.
What kind of things do you think would mostly fall on that list of things that would have benefited in the next 2 years from Thomas being in the legislature?
Right. Roads. You know, we've been trying to get Third Avenue paved and smoothened for the past, 5 years now. Fisheries. Thomas brought money to the Toksnek Watershed Council, different projects around town for culverts, highway money, all those projects that you don't necessarily see. I mean, obviously the sidewalk project this summer was a prominent one, but those millions of dollars get spent here. And one of the criticisms of Thomas was that his discretionary funding went to, his pet projects, things like the Eagle Foundation, Haynes Living, and there was grousing here that money wasn't going to things like roads, or not enough of it was. But I think that money still was coming to town, millions of dollars, as investments into things like HAL and the Eagle Foundation, which will bring, conceivably bring money to town for the future. I think that Bill may be able to work, if he wins, he may be able to work his way back into a position of that same influence over time. If he loses, we'll see just how sharp Jonathan Kreis Tompkins is.
And do you think there's much difference in Senator Kukesh losing? I mean, obviously, Senator Stedman was an incumbent, Senator Kukesh was an incumbent, but because of redistricting, they had to run against each other. Now we're represented by Senator Stedman, who's more of a, he's more familiar with Prince of Wales and the island communities. Do you think that's going to have any huge effect for Haynes?
Well, yeah. In Kukesh's district, we were one of the bigger communities. In Stedman's, in the new Senate District Q, we're a smaller one. So, that can't be particularly good for Haynes. On the other hand, Stedman is savvy. He was the co-chair of the Senate Finance Committee. He's a moderate Republican, I think much the way Bill Thomas was a moderate Republican. We're not going to have the same. The district, I believe, is a bigger broader geographical area.
Right.
In terms of Southeast, including Sitkin, Ketchikan, Stedman's a smart guy, and he's got where he is because he understands some of these issues. He drew a line on the oil taxes that was a more sophisticated explanation of what was going on there than a lot of the other legislators articulated. We'll see. This is really the time that you need a person who's skilled on the human in politics, because we've lost population in Southeast, and to get more of the pie with less population, you have to have a certain amount of swagger and ability. And we'll see what we can get.
That's a good way of putting it. One other thing I did want to ask you, because I thought it was interesting that people don't realize how much money campaign season brings in to, well, newspapers and a lot of other places. And so with the election season over, does that hit the Chilkat Valley News at the bottom line there a little bit?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think in the 100 and how much was spent on the Jonathan Kreis Tompkins bill?
Oh, they were over 100,000. They were one of the most expensive races, if not the expensive race in the state. Yeah.
We get a pretty tiny percentage of all that money. But, once every 10 years after redistricting, when everything gets scrambled, is the best time for advertising for us, because these people, even if they have become comfortable the last couple of years in their incumbency, oftentimes have a real dogfight, and they spend money on it, and it comes our way. So,
do you think any of it's effective? I know you and I had a discussion toward the end of the campaign, because, and maybe this is where newspapers and media were helpful a little bit, in that there was an ad that came out right before the election with Jonathan Kreis Tompkins and Ethel Lund that Bill Thomas didn't have a chance to respond to. But when something like that gets sent out, it wasn't in the newspaper, it was a personal flyer. But do you think advertising like that, do you think it's benefit? I mean, does it help residents decide really who to vote for? Does it really play any part in an election, I guess?
Well, I guess I'd ask you why people buy Wonder Bread. You know, it's you can put your name out there. And, you know, the thing about advertising, it also reflects that you have a desire to win. And people want to vote for somebody that they think is working and will work hard. And advertising reflects that you're going out there, you're getting money, you want to get your name out there. And so I think it works on a couple different levels. It attracts people who maybe don't, aren't as engaged. Well, I saw Bill's ads, maybe on some subliminal level, or Jonathan Kreis Tompkins ads. That helps. Just with campaign signs around town, bumper stickers, all of it, it's reinforcing the message. And I think if it didn't work, people wouldn't spend money on it.
Yeah, I just thought it was interesting, especially with the presidential election, because everybody talks about negative ads. And I don't think they were quite the same negative. They were somewhat informative, but it's still interesting to look at local political advertising in a way. But
Jonathan's last-minute flyer those last-minute flyers have been done before. Bill Thomas himself had done one critical of Tim June in his last tough election that was Tim couldn't respond to. They're part of the game, and they're completely legal. It's up to voters to decide, if that's enough, or if that's fair play, or whatnot.
So any other major events or news going on that we need to know about right now?
Well, yeah, we're right in the middle of the bird season. We've got the Eagle Festival this weekend. We have the astronaut speaking Saturday night. And then the next Thursday, a week from today, is Thanksgiving. And it's rare that the Eagle Festival and Thanksgiving get smooshed so close together. We have an early Thanksgiving this year.
Well, that's what you mean by birds.
We got birds. Also this weekend is the only home volleyball games of the year for Haines. So opportunity to get out and to see the girls perform. But there is, in this next week, it's going to be very busy.
Okay, thanks, Tom.
Thanks, Margaret.
Now it's time to check in. Today we're checking in with Alaska State Park Ranger Preston Kors. This week, of course, is the Bald Eagle Festival. While there's 5 days' worth of activities happening, the focus of the festival is viewing the thousands of eagles that converge in the Chilkat Valley this time of year. But as Kors explains, it's a balancing act of enjoying wildlife while at the same time respecting their territory. So, Preston, people from around the world actually come to this festival to see the eagles, and there are many people that come out to the preserve, and is it more than any time of year usually?
Correct. This time of year, we get a lot of people out at the Eagle Preserve.
And, of course, most of them are here because of the festival, but there are also lots of people that travel here on their own in the preceding and the weeks following the festival, right?
Correct. And there's a lot of people that even come before and after the Eagle Fest because, you know, the eagles congregate, for a couple of months.
Has Park Ranger, are you out there almost every day during this time of year and during the festival?
Yeah, I try to get out there because there is an increase of people, but I can't guarantee I'm out there every day. I try to be out there as much as possible, plus the local wildlife trooper also increases patrols and is out there.
And in your time here as park ranger, have you seen this event grow, and not just the event, but just this time of year for eagle viewing? Has it become more popular with tourists and with visitors, you think?
You know, I think there has been an increase, at least in the 4 years I've been here. It seems like there is, and I think a lot of it is it's getting more publicized. The Eagle Foundation, I think, is doing a much better job or has increased publicizing it and getting participation. So things have seemed to increase. Even independent travelers, I think, are getting the word about the Eagle congregation, and it does seem to pick up. We're getting a lot of film crews that are applying for permits to come out for Discovery Channel filming and stuff like that. So we do go up there and try to monitor things and keep things safe along the road corridor to keep people out of the road and just kind of monitor behavior.
What's a major concern you're seeing? Is it that along the highway there, making sure people use the pullouts instead of stopping on the road?
Yeah, you know, it's always been an issue with people, you know, wanting to get photos, and especially if we got snow on the ground and it's hard to walk through snow, they want to walk on the plowed road, and which is definitely an increased hazard. But one of the bigger concerns is the fact of people going out kind of on the flats to try to get closer to eagles and approach eagles, and we really try to. We just try to discourage people going out there, just so that way they're not disturbing the eagles, because obviously the eagles need to land out there while they're feeding on the fish carcasses, and the eagles really need to get the nourishment. That's the whole reason they come here, is to get the nourishment from the salmon that are running late and in the open water. And people going out onto the flats can disturb the eagles. Plus, they also disturb other viewers trying to watch the eagles, you know,
and
kind of get in the way of their photography and their viewing experience.
And the Eagle Foundation has said that when they bring the busloads of people out during the festival to the grounds, they try to inform them about etiquette for viewing and discourage them from getting out onto the flats. But as park ranger, there are also some interactions with the eagles or any wildlife that could cross the line, correct?
It is illegal to harass wildlife by approaching and disturbing. So when you're viewing, you know, granted sometimes people will try to approach to get a slightly closer picture. If the eagle, like, flies off or changes its behavior, you basically just hit that fine line of viewing and started to harass or disturb the wildlife.
Okay.
So what we really look for is people who continually do that. If like an eagle flies off and then they keep approaching it and making it fly off, and they approach it and it flies off again, that is definitely wildlife harassment and harassing the eagles when they're there trying to feed. If, you know, they get out of their vehicle and not even aware there's an eagle there and they kind of flush it up, that's kind of a one-time thing, and I think a lot of us do that occasionally, and that is not really what we're looking for. We're looking for the intent and people, like, pursuing the eagles or any wildlife for that matter.
Okay, and can you just give us a description of what areas and viewing areas we're talking about when we're discussing all these different places? I mean, we talk about the preserve, we talk about the council grounds, critical habitat, all of those.
So generally, the Eagle Preserve runs from approximately 8 mile to 31 mile Haines Highway.
Okay.
With the main viewing area being like 19 to 21 mile where those pull-offs are, and we have, you know, the Inter Pavilion, and there's a boardwalk and a path, and that stuff out there is known as the Council Ground. It's a critical habitat area. It's the main viewing area of the Eagles. The preserve is actually 48,000 acres, so that immediate area right there is just a small part of it, but it's a crucial part.
Well, thanks for that information, and thanks to State Park Ranger Preston Kors for joining us today. Just a reminder, you can always find the archived shows of Talk Around Town online at khns.org. We put all the shows up there in their entirety after they air. And they're pretty easy to listen to and peruse through. If you're looking for a certain segment or not, you don't have to listen to the whole show again if you don't want to. So just a reminder, you can check those out. Also, if you ever have a topic or idea for Talk Around Town, something you'd like to learn more about, or a suggestion for Deborah to explore more, please drop us a line. You can always email me, Margaret, at news@khns.org, or call us up, or talk to Deborah when you see her around town. We especially like ideas for the talking topic and also for the My Name Is segment. We're always looking for people who want to come in and tell us about themselves, even if it's just 5 minutes. You get to learn a lot about your neighbors. So keep that in mind. Recently, we've been talking a lot about harbor and dock infrastructure, but mostly as it relates to commercial enterprises. So I thought, in light of the recent passage of the bond measure on the ballot, which gives Haines $15 million toward our small boat harbor project, that we should talk with some folks about that project and what the timeline is for seeing some changes. Here's my discussion from this week with Haines Harbor Master Phil Benner and Chairman of the Ports and Harbor Advisory Committee, Norm Hughes. First of all, do you want to give us the history, I guess, the history of the harbor project? I know that it goes back several years, but where it comes about that we need some either expansion or improvements at the harbor?
Sure, it does go back about 15 years at least. The Portage Cove Harbor, the Docks and Harbors Committee, previously it was just a Harbor Advisory Council before that, that looked at it and saw the need which for more stalls in the harbor. The initial plan was maybe to move north of the harbor, but what we found through different state and federal soil samplings and drilling is that the north part of the moving north was not feasible due to soil restrictions. So then the current Port and Harbor Advisory Council started looking at going south and how many slips we needed, and that is where we've ended up. So far we've done some bathymetry and drilling south. We should have those back in a couple months, the exact geotech of that, and we've done some uphill planning, but there's a... what would you call it? A sample plan of what we'd like to do available in the harbor office and also down at the administration building. Both places you could take a look at it. They're on the wall by the mayor's office and also in the harbor office.
Okay.
What we plan to do. So with the bond passing, we got $15 million thanks to the legislator and Bill Thomas there, we got $15 million.
Okay. So what were the major, from what I could understand, the major needs for improvement, the reason that there is improvement needed, is because of the breakwater and just expanded facilities. Is that correct, or what am I?
Correct.
Okay.
The current breakwater does not provide the protection that we would like to see, or the federal and state governments would like to see. So we're extending the breakwater to provide more protection. There will be a little stub breakwater coming off the land. Then this one will be expanded 250 feet to the south. and then it will provide us 76 new different size stalls and 1,000 feet more of transient moorage that's desperately needed, especially like if we have another fishing season. Last season, we seemed like we had a lot of people from other places in our harbor.
That came up. And I guess that's the question. Why has the need come about? You mentioned state and federal, so they do have they have some input as far as the breakwater and what's necessary for the breakwater portion of it. State and federal agencies, or
correct?
Okay.
The federal, it's been in and out with the Army Corps of Engineers, but if we touch the existing breakwater, which is owned by the Army Corps of Engineers, if they're going to have something to say about how we tie into that. And then the state is providing us monies for this facility. And, of course, they want to see not only what we've already built protected, but what anything we would build in addition protected to the best of our ability.
Okay. So with the state funds, is there any borough money that will end up going into this, as far as we know, or not at this point?
just a very little bit, I mean.
Yeah, I think initial monies for the drilling, Norm Hughes here, was provided by the borough. We had some funds available left over from when the harbor was turned over to the borough. We've got a chunk of money from that, and some of that money was used for the new docks and the harbors and such. There's a little bit left, and we took a little piece of that because we couldn't secure Army Corps funding for the cores. We couldn't move, we couldn't expand without drilling cores. So we can tell how soft or firm the bottom is, and that affects the type of breakwater we can put out there, and also it affects the cost considerably because the wave permeable breakwater is going to be 2-3 times as expensive as a rubble mound breakwater. But if you use a rubble mound breakwater, it could be more expensive than the other if the bottom's too soft. If you pile up all those rocks on the bottom, they'll just ooze away. So we've been working to get the cores drilled. We finally got them drilled here and the funding secured. And this fall, it's going to take P&D about 3 months to work up their report on that. And it should be available February, the manager mentioned, probably beginning of February. And then really we can see what our cost will be for some of these structures. The harbor expansion, it's always nice to have a bigger harbor. All the other harbors in Southeast Alaska have been expanding over the last decade, and we've been working on it. It's just going to the north wasn't workable with the Army Corps. It was their designs were, it just didn't have enough funding. We could never get funding, and with the way federal dollars are now, it's pretty slim chance. So luckily, we were able to get a lot of this funded through the state here in this last year. We got $4.5 million from the governor early on in July, and then the bond went through. That's another $15 million. So we got $19.5 million. And really, we need to dredge out the harbor and a bunch of other things, and these funds will help provide for that. We have a boat launch, funding for a boat launch that's not being built at this time because we need protection for it. Fish and Game won't allow us to build this two-lane boat ramp with a float down the middle.
Right, without the protection. Okay.
Without the protection. And there's no space really inside our basin to do that without removing something else there.
Okay. Well, here's a question, though, Norm. As someone who's on the committee, the Ports and Harbor Advisory Committee, right,
yes,
and as a harbor user, besides the breakwater, what are the other, why is there a need for either more infrastructure, expansion, all that kind of thing? For someone who may not go down to the harbor as much as someone who uses it, what's going on down there that these are necessary?
Well, the first is we replaced all the docks with wood docks. We had concrete before, and the wood docks do not break up the waves like the concrete docks did. So the wave energy passes through the harbor and moves all the boats around now, and also is going to prematurely work the dock, so it's going to wear out. And so we're finding that we do need the breakwater to protect our investment, I think it's $5 million at least we spent on new docks and such, and electrification and everything. And the improvements, I guess, they're driven by, you know, boat owners. You know, they're a fool and his money is soon parted, and they usually own a boat. And people with boats spend money. Okay, I spend money. It's my business. We have 60 permit holders. It's one of the highest per capita in Southeast Alaska for permit holders per ratio of residents. We're the biggest single industry in Haines. There's more commercial fishermen than any other profession in town. And also we got a lot of sport boats and pleasure crafts and charter operations. And then we have emerging shuttles back and forth from the Skagway. And people that got boats and they like tying up, especially people with big boats. And we'd like to have them be able to pull into our harbor and tie up. And right now, we're so congested that we really can't get these bigger boats. And we have to tell them they got to bring their skiff in or they just go somewhere else. And the expanded basin is going to allow us to have more features that will suit more users. When we do the breakwaters, we're going to have the stub wall come out from the beach, and it probably come out about where the Fisherman's Memorial is, where the park is on the beach.
Right.
There'll be a straight out from there to protect, and then there'll be a continuation kind of arcing out from our existing breakwater. And that will kind of encompass a very large area, which is going to allow us to move the seaplane float out there. We'll be able to have the drive, the two-lane boat trailer launch there. We're going to have triple the size of the parking lot, and we'll be able to have drive-through parking spots for people with trailers so they can easily get their boats in and out of the water. They don't have to have their boat tied to a dock then. They can take their boat home with them. Also, we don't have money at this time, but there will be space set aside for a drive-down boat ramp, which is basically a barge with a ramp down onto it. Juno has it, Sitka has it, and they're great. We're driving down, vehicle down, you can bring the refrigeration guy, the welder, you know, it doubles as a work float. We can bring our nets right down to our boats and pull them on. It's going to be pretty handy. People with wheelchair access be able to get right onto a boat, be able to drive them right down there. They might even have touch-and-go shuttles, I don't know. But it's going to be a multi-use fixture. But before we can do that, we have to get the whole harbor dredged. And we have not been able to find funding from the feds for dredging. They said it wasn't shallow enough to dredge, and this and that, and the tide medium changed because the glacier rebound, and it's not their fault, or it just went on and on. So we'll be able to do that with these funds, and when we dredge out the basin, we'll be able to have more space for where tenders can get under the ice chute and some things like that. The F float, which goes off the fuel dock, is about at the end of its service life. The pilings are rotting through, and that wood dock is going to need temporary repairs. It needs maintenance every year, but that will go away, and that will allow the whole harbor to open up.
Okay. Well, so this is a question for either of you as far as where the public process is in this situation yet, because have the design plans for the final phase been finalized, or is there still room to have are you looking for public input on any of that? Are you looking for who wants to answer that one?
Sure, we always want public input, and it's just started. We haven't even had 35% drawings. We just have a conception, and as this gets, I can see probably next spring we'll start moving towards public process at the Port and Harbor Advisory Committees, going over exactly what we want, what we need, and the public's always invited to those. But all we have right now is a concept. We haven't even started a design as such.
Okay.
We have a conceptual idea.
Okay. And you've worked at other harbors in Alaska, right?
Correct.
Phil? So are the changes that we're talking about for Haines, are those, I don't know, are they extravagant, or are they, you know, I mean, I think some people who maybe haven't been to other harbors and are just used to the Haines Harbor think of a drive down float as extravagant, or is that really necessary, those kind of things.
No, that's the way we're moving. all harbors are moving in that direction, and not at all. Haines actually is catching up with other harbors at this time. since the state turned it over and this public process has begun where we've had monies to start, we have the new wood docks, and this is just exactly that, a continuation to move forward, to put Haines in the best possible space to be able to take on those fisheries, take on different things that could happen that are happening in other communities. And we get a lot of money from the commercial fishing industry via fish tax. You know, there's Northern Economics does a study for every gillnetter or seiner that parks in your harbor that brings between $200,000 and $240,000 to the community that we put the slip in. If they live in if they send their kids to school there, they buy their supplies from you, they're paying taxes for the property they own, they, you know, they do all their things in the harbor. So we want to make sure that we provide what's needed here for our industry.
Right. And I've seen the wait list. You have quite a few people on the wait list. And not all of them are from Haines, which isn't I would gather to venture, not a bad thing. To have somebody from Whitehorse that wants to keep a boat here means that that person will keep visiting and things like that, right?
Oh, great. Yes. Yeah. And also we have commercial fishermen from as far south as Ketchikan that are on the list because they would rather be here than down there.
Oh, well, what do you think of that, Norm? Is that a problem? No, not a problem. But, I mean, that's an interesting – I hadn't really thought – I mean, Haines is such a home port for Haines fishermen that, you know, I think more of Petersburg and Sitka's a kind of harbor where
– fish have tails, and the fishermen follow them. You know, they go everywhere. And whether we have good crabbing up here or salmon fisheries, enhanced salmon coming back to the Lower Lynn Canal you know, there's interest. You know, we have shrimping here and stuff. Really, a lot of these fisheries are already maximized, you know, for comfortability factor, but there's still a well-managed resource here. And there's a rotation of fisheries. There's the graying of the fleet. Eventually, people get to a point where they're not going to be fishing anymore, and they trade off. And in the recent decade, we've seen some young adults taking over boats and buying in, or leasing boats and learning the trade, and then they fish around me, and then I remember what it was like when I was young. I was that bad of a jerk. Goes around, comes around.
Uh-huh.
But it's all good.
Okay. Well, Phil, I wanted to ask you about a couple. Well, and Norm too. As far as, let's just before I move on from this topic, talk about Ports and Harbor Advisory Committee in this process, because well, I'm sure anybody can go down and talk to you, Phil, about their ideas for the harbor. In the borough government, one way of having that public input is to come to the committee meetings, I would think, and be able to talk, listen to you guys discuss these future plans and also put your input there officially.
The Harbor Committee, and now it's the Haines Borough Ports and Harbor Advisory Committee. We advise the borough on ports and harbor issues and the harbor master, or he brings to our attention things that we should look into. And it's just another layer of government, but it's a good layer. It starts at the very basic. You know, you can show up and talk to us anytime. We have very informal meetings, you know, and we encourage the public to come. They can be a little dry, but we've been working on this harbor expansion in many different forms for quite a while, years and years, a little here, a little that, manager. Whoever the manager is at the time says, oh, I'm bringing you this, and we look at it. And then we came up with this conceptual design. We had four to pick from. We picked probably one of the larger footprint ones. We had some, we had to have a list of what things cost. They broke it out in a list and phases and how that works so we could pick and choose. And that, once we got it to that stage, we went to Representative Bill Thomas, and he looked at it. And he was able to make sense of why we need X amount of money, and we're able to key through these numbers out, and the other people down there in Juneau didn't balk at it, and so we got $15 million in the GEO bond and the 4.5 from the governor, mm-hmm. and so we come together with this package, but now we have to start looking at hard numbers. What do things cost now,
right,
3 years later? Because those old numbers from 3 years ago are not going to be, they're only good for a year or so at 10% fudge factor. And so we'll pull out the old list, we'll look at the new list, and we'll just then we're going to look at what we're thinking about doing, and we're hoping people in the public show up, and the people say, you should put a breakwater over here, or you should drive sheet pile here and expand this parking lot. You should do this. And then we have to vent these things. And I'm hoping this spring, starting sometime February, March, we can start talking about this stuff, because most of the Harbor Committee have jobs and lives and wives and things. And so in the summer, they're really busy. So
right.
In March, April, and May, hopefully we can have meetings and get everybody involved, get the Planning Commission, the Tourism Committee, Parks and Rec, because we will be impacting a borough park.
Okay.
And there are people that walk on the beach and they're saying, what's going to happen to my beach if we do this or we do that? And so we have to field all the stuff, because I can't possibly think of all the variables. I think I've got a good idea, and someone will come along and straighten me right up with their good idea. And we have to decision by committee for these ideas to the borough assembly and the manager. And then in the end, they say what we get or what we can't afford. And the manager plays a very big part in this, because he's all about counting those beans and making sure we got enough money and making sure things are funded. So
right.
We're going to have to see how this all lines up, but until we have some hard costs, we won't be able to know how far we're going to do. But we will have a breakwater. We will have a bigger basin. I'm not sure what we're going to have inside. We may have to phase over four phases or something to get all the features inside we would like.
Mm-hmm.
But we're going to have a bigger parking lot, and I believe we're going to have a bigger basin, and then, you know, we'll see how much money we have left for docks and infrastructure. Those things we can kind of piecemeal. We can extend docks in sequence, but first we need to do all the dredging at once.
Okay.
Mobilization costs for dredging and things, it's kind of expensive, and getting the permit, and depending on the breakwater, we may have to reroute the sewer outfall for the Haynesboro, and so there's, you know, all this stuff, but we won't know until we get those studies back in here in another month or two. So it's we're all waiting to see if $19 million is enough.
Okay. Not attached to that money, I think, Phil, is... can you tell me, just give me a brief update on what's happening with Letnikoff? Because that's not attached to the $15 million in the bond, but there are some improvements going on for Letnikoff. Is that correct?
Correct. We have just under $1 million slated for improvements out at Letnikoff. And it is not tied to that, but it's what it is tied to, believe it or not, is the Port Chilkoot dock renovations.
Okay, so those two are tied together, those two projects.
Yes, simply because we're putting in the new Port Chilkoot dock starting in the fall, but the gangway from Port Chilkoot dock is going to go out to Letnikoff to make it ADA compliant. If you've ever been out to Letnikoff at low tide, you know, it's like climbing a ladder out there currently. So what will happen is we will try to coordinate it so that when this gangway comes out, it will go over to Letnikoff. The trestle will have to be brought back a little bit, and there will be different other engineering that has to be done, a new landing float. And this, the gangway here at the PC dock will go out to Letnikoff.
Okay. And then next summer, there are going to be the improvements here at Port Chilkoot. Some
stuff
going
on.
Starting in the fall. Okay.
Yeah, and Letnikoff Cove, some of it will probably begin in the spring. The anchor system, chains, there's going to be a new two. Right now, we only have one wood dock extension. There'll be another wood dock extension. There's some piling that's going to be done. So you will see things start next spring and summer out at Letnikoff Cove also.
And those, is that more sport users out there? I know there's some fisher, you know, some, like Norm, you tie up there sometimes in the middle of the season, but I know a lot of sports fishermen use that ramp out there,
they
right?
They love it out there. Love it.
Okay.
Well, Letnikoff has a long history of being a commercial port.
Right.
You know, before there was a road out there, there was the cannery building and the pilings. And
right.
And the fleet likes tying up to them, and there's no gate that gets locked at night like it can happen at the cannery. And tying to that dock is great right there at the parking lot. You know, we just need more lineal footage there because there's a lot of pressure on it. And with the new boat launch, it's helped with that. A lot of people can trailer the boats in and out of the water safely and easily. And then they don't necessarily need to tie to the dock all the time. But there's some people just like being tied to the dock and walk down there and hop in their boat. And like Phil said, we have one set of wood floats. They might be 4 or 5 years old. We'd like to get another set out there, another 100 feet. I've been contacted by some public members and also the Haines Sportsman Association. It's like, we'd love to have another float out there. You know, that Derby May. Can we get it in by May? And I'm saying, I'll talk to Phil. You know, we have to look at these cost things and whether the pilings that have fallen over in the past, is there enough left to support keeping that dock in line? We don't want to put a dock out there and have it get broken up just so people can have it for a month. But, you know, those are things we're just going to have to look at and work towards. And my goal is to try and make everybody happy, but you can't.
It's nice of you to try, Norm.
Well, with, you know, all these harbor expansions and stuff, you know, people get displaced. We're going to have 2-3 years here of jogging boats around and different things going on and cruise ship docks being demolished and then recreated, and then the port's going to be demolished and recreated on the end, and then Letnikoff. So, you know, you may not be able to use the dock during these renovations, but every attempt is made to accommodate the public and do these things in a timely and cost-effective manner.
Right.
Usually when we're trying to do these projects, it gets explained to me that, you know, mobilization, that's a third of the cost. It's 25% of the cost. That's a lot of money. So if we can do two projects at the same time with the same equipment, then we save hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars. So we're just going to have to look at those things in the spring and see how this, in a perfect world, see how we can line this stuff up. And then we find out, after we put things out to bid, what it's going to be.
Right.
Really. And then, we have Carlos on now with facilities manager, and he'll be probably overseeing this whole thing here in the next few years.
Are you going to be here this whole time, Phil?
Yes.
You are? Okay. Well, that's good, right? It's nice to have one stay. One last program I wanted to ask you about. I don't think it ties in too close to any of these large projects, but the Clean Harbors program that you're trying to work on, right? Can you give us a little update on that or how that's
going?
Sure.
We got our Rachel Lord, who's the head of a Clean Harbors program for Alaska, she came in September, walked our harbors, and gave us our assessment. So now we're working towards coming into compliance. We're actually not in too bad a shape, but there again, like Norm says, everything costs money. So we're doing the best we can. If you've walked around down there, we're trying to do as much recycling as possible. Now we've added on cardboard recycling, which also brings down the cost of us taking the trash out of here. That's a big deal. So we're trying to get all the waste streams accomplished. Then also in all of Southeast Alaska, especially us smaller communities, is we have a tidal grid. And it's very, very important to us not to lose our tidal grid. It's our only emergency get the boat out of the water situation we have. And so what do we do to make the tidal grid a little bit more healthy, a little bit more environmentally friendly rather than just going down there? So we got, I'm searching on things to do that. And then, believe it or not, a lot of it is just general knowledge, signage. This is where you put antifreeze. This is where this is where the pump out is. This is where all those things are.
So. Okay. And so this is a voluntary program. Okay. So when you say compliance, it's just if you want to be part of the program, you have to comply with certain standards and things like that?
Sure.
Okay.
I will say this. We are the only Western state that it is a voluntary program right now. So I'm not saying anything, but it be in our best interest to volunteer and become compliant before someone says you have to be compliant.
What is the biggest factor in being a clean harbor? Is it, you know, discharge from boats, oily discharge? Is it recycling? I mean, what kind of things are we talking about just to give people an idea of what items or you know, discharge we're talking, I guess?
Correct. That is. Just like I said, it's general knowledge.
Okay.
Hey, don't pump your bilge. And, you know, and we don't see a lot of that in Haines Harbor. But also is the big thing in Alaska is the cost of what to do with what you got. So when you have say I get all the commercial fishermen to come, then they change their antifreeze. What do you do with that antifreeze? It's a big private expense for a private boat owner to try to figure out what to do with that antifreeze. So what we are trying to do as a harbor and as a committee, the is figure out how best to take care of those waste streams. And that's what it is.
Okay. Okay. And one more question, because last year during the fishing season, this came up a lot at the Borough Assembly, was the increase in cost of waste disposal at the harbor. Okay. So does the Clean Harbors program at all tie into that? If we have these recycling, does that help bring that cost down at all as far as general waste? Because that was a big problem last year.
That's what, and when we separate those waste streams, it does bring it down.
Okay.
They charge the currently who picks Community Waste Solutions or Haynes Sanitation, whatever.
Right.
They charge us extra if we have electronic waste in there. They charge us extra for construction waste in there. They charge us extra for different waste streams. So that's what it does affect what we're doing.
Why did it go up so much last year? Do you have any idea? I mean,
I've never been told.
You've never been told. Okay. Just curious. I mean, it was a discussion at several assembly meetings. Whether, you know, the fishermen's, whether there should be a tax on that for harbor users, not just fishermen, but for harbor users and things like that. So I was wondering if the Clean Waters Program at all helped, well, you know, Clean Harbors helped with that. But yeah.
And okay. I think the Port Harbor Advisory Committee sort of took care of that. They put in a holder, they put in a fee schedule, and they put zero beside it right now because we're going to take a look at what we're getting and what it costs and calculate what it's taking. And we, right now, we do not charge anything for that. There might become a point when we say, hey, we can no longer absorb that cost. And at that time, I'll take that to the Port and Harbor Advisory Committee. I'll say, this is what it's costing us to get rid of antifreeze. This is what's costing us to get rid of oil. This is in a different electronics. And then there may be a slight fee that we'll have to charge. I hope it doesn't come to that.
Right. Okay. Anything you want to add there, Norm?
Well, I think if it's, as Phil said, it's educating the fleet or the users of the harbor and on the proper disposal of certain waste. And I think a reasonable cost associated with disposal of waste oil, antifreeze, other hazardous waste that are generated or used on boats, whether it's paint or things, and gasoline, or that people will help pay the cost. There's people that won't pay it no matter what.
Right.
Okay. And they'll dump it overboard or take it home and burn it in their stove or I don't know or what. But most of the people are going to comply and they're going to be helpful. And that, you know, a reasonable fee that helps with at least with management costs, because we're going to have to watch this, maintain it, keep everyone safe. We don't want to create a toxic waste dump. You know, before everything just went in the dumpster and went away. Well, EPA is not letting the dump do that anymore.
Right.
So it's not the dump's fault. It's our fault, and we have to work on it. So I look forward to this program and coming up with a way, a containment building or some way of doing this that that we can fund and make this happen. Because as I understand, that are there any clean harbors in Southeast Alaska? Are we the first or...
Well, hopefully we will be the first one. We are the first one to enter into an agreement with the Clean Harbors, and Sitka is getting ready to go that direction. They've been, and there are a couple others, even Juneau, but we are the first one to sign the agreement, and I believe we will be the first one that will be a clean port and harbor.
Oh, wow. When would that designation, when is that?
When we signed the agreement in September, we said we would comply within a year.
Within a year. So they come back and do another evaluation.
Right.
Interesting. Okay. Well, keep us updated, Phil. So, Phil Benner, Haynes Harbor Master, and Norm Hughes, member of the Port. Are you chair or member?
I'm chair of the Ports and Harbor Committee.
Okay.
Busybody.
And busybody. Thanks, guys. Thanks for joining us. Lastly, taking a look at the calendar, we have a lot of activities coming up, including a variety of Haynes Glacier Bear sports. This weekend is the first and only home games for the volleyball team when they're hosting Craig on Friday and Saturday. The new gym floor is also going to be dedicated before the volleyball game at 7 p.m. Friday. The wrestling team will be in Ketchikan, but then wrestling will come to Haines on November 30th and December 1st, when Haines will host for the first time the regional meet, with 14 Southeast schools attending. School's activity director Tiana Taylor told me that volunteers are needed for timing, scoring, and other duties, so contact her if you're interested. Basketball season begins November 26th, although the first home games won't start until January. And in other events, next week is Thanksgiving, of course, and this year there are two community dinners, both from noon to 2 p.m. One is at the Haines Christian Center and the other at Port Chilcoot Bible Church. And tonight is the Wild and Scenic Film Festival at Harriet Hall, beginning at 5:30. It's hosted by the Southeast Alaska State Fair and Tokshinuk Watershed Council. Tickets are still available, I believe, at the bookstore or at the door. And that's it for Talk Around Town this week. Thanks to our guests Tom Morfitt, Harbor Master Phil Benner, Norm Hughes, and Preston Kors. Next edition of Talk Around Town will be November 29th, when our regular host Deborah Schnabel will be back. Thank goodness, right? And I'm Margaret Friednauer. Thanks for joining us today. You're listening to KHNS, Haines, Skagway, and Klukwan. KHNS welcomes comments on topics important to you. If you'd like to make a commentary to air on your local community radio station, check our website for guidelines at khns.org under Community. Each listener commentary airs twice, once in the evening and once in the morning after your local news. Everyone has an opinion, and you can make yours heard on the KHNS commentary.